Welcome to all of you, and welcome to all who are listening on Torah Anytime and other platforms. Please press the follow button to receive ongoing shiur updates, and please share this shiur with at least two friends. The Torah is not stagnant. It grows with us as we travel this journey of life. As we experience new adventures, new struggles, the same text of old has different meanings, carries different meanings to us, speaks to us differently where we are. And each generation, of course, finds new meanings in Torah. Not simply new Chidushei Torah, new interpretations, but really an entire new rhythm. They hear an entire new rhythm, how a Torah speaks to them and their orientation. Let me give an example. For better or for worse, we live in the me generation. People no longer do things based on obligation, responsibility, but rather they approach life with the paramount question, what's in it for me? How will this bring me satisfaction? And if it won't bring me satisfaction, it's deemed an unworthy endeavor. That was not the way things used to be. Obligation, duty, responsibility used to be seen as virtues. Think of JFK's famous inaugural, ask not what the country will do for you, but what you will do for the country. Well, that would not be a very appealing inaugural speech in the 21st century. We're a me generation. And we approach Yiddishkeit and religion from a different perspective for this reason. There was a time when simply fulfilling one's responsibility, checking in the box, I said every word in the machzor, I was at minyan. Well, that was a motivation. Well, not anymore. Now we will ask questions like, is the davening speaking to me? This universal hallow text, well, is it my individual, personal source of satisfaction? Is it espousing within me my personal thoughts, longings, struggles through which to connect to the divine? This was not the way they thought back in the day. And we interpret all mitzvahs and all Torah. We hear it differently for this reason. We hear a Torah which is talking to us how we will find personal fulfillment rather than simply a Torah of obligation and duty. I would certainly suggest, merely to cite one example, Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan, when he would study the tefillah from the perspective of meditation, speaking to a generation, a 1960s generation, which was exposed to the Far East, and behaviors of self-awareness, yoga, meditation, and he showed how one can see the protocol of the tefillah and the halachas from this perspective. Well, certainly he was aware that that was not a traditional approach through which former generations interpreted the tefillah. But I think he would argue a Torah's Chaim speaks to each generation from their perspective, from their orientation, as long as the approach can be traced authoritatively within the Mesorah and within the Torah, even if it was not the focus of previous generations, that is how a Torah's Chaim grows with us and speaks with us today. This notion of a Torah which grows with us, I would like to trace from the development of the Mishkan narrative in these parshios, and in particular, its evolution in this week's parsha, Kisisa. It is well known Chazal's teaching that the Mishkan served as a kapara, as an atonement for the Chet HaEgel, the sin of the golden calf, which leads many great Mefarshim to believe that the entire Tzivui HaMishkan, the entire commandment about the Mishkan, was only uttered by Hashem after the sin of the golden calf in our parsha. After all, as much as the chronology is not that way, the Tzivei HaMishkan and Parshas Truma Tetzav at the beginning of Kisisa appears prior to the golden calf, we know in Mukta Mukher B'Torah, texts can be interpreted non-chronologically. However, I would assert that a Pshut of Shal Mikra, a simple read of the text, would suggest a chronological development here. Let's kind of trace the narrative from this perspective, the Pshat read, and see how the Pshat speaks to us. At the end of Parshas Mishpatim, Moshe ascends on high to receive Luchos, Torah, in a general sense. And what specific message is he then told in that context? Parshas Truma Tetzava Kisisa, roll out the Mishkan, implying it was actually the Mishkan that Moshe was told about when he was on high. That the overall Torah message he's receiving on high is specifically the Mishkan. Certainly there was a Midrashic teaching that he received all of Torah when he was on high, but I think the simple Pshat read is that he received the Mishkan narrative, because that is what it says Hashem told him immediately following his ascension up the mountain. If, again, we feel the pulse of the text and hear its rhythm as it rolls out from Parshas Mishpatim to Truma to Tzavah Kisis. Because after all, the Mishkan, as Ramban writes, is the continuation of Matan Torah, the Har Sinai experience. So it is appropriately the foundation of Torah which he receives on high. And it is only then that Hashem presents him with the Luchos, which he brings down when he descends the mountain. This reed is buttressed and solidified when we hear a precious textual clue. And that is back in Parshas Truma, when Hashem commanded him regarding the Mishkan. And he tells him, in Perach Chafhei, Pasuk Chaf Aleph, V'yel ha'arun titun as ha'edus. You know what you're supposed to place in the Arun, the Ark, the Edus, the testimony. What is this testimony you are to place in the Ark? Asher etin eilacha. This testimony which I am then going to give you. Well, what is this testimony which Hashem says he's going to give him after the Mishkan narrative? Certainly the simple meaning is, well, it is the testimony referred to in the Chumash itself, in our parsha, when it says regarding the Luchos, Perek Lamed Aleph, Pasuk Yud Ches, Vayitin al Moshe kechalos l'dabar imo bar Sinai shnei Luchos ha'edos. Hashem gave him the two tablets of testimony. That is the testimony that he was told back in Truma, this testimony that I'm going to later give you and you're going to place in the Aron. That is the simple read, notwithstanding other Mefarshim's alternative interpretations. It is the Eidus, the testimony, the Luchos, that Hashem is saying, I am later going to give you, about which he was commanding him in Parshas Truma regarding the Mishkan. So clearly the Mishkan narrative precedes the presentation of the Luchos at the end of the 40 days. Because he says regarding the Mishkan, I will later give you this Eidus, this Luchos. I haven't given it to you yet. The 40 days are not up. So we clearly see, from a Pshat perspective, that the Mishkan was a pre-existent reality before the Egel. Certainly in its original presentation, it was not seen as a kapar for the Chet HaEgel, but simply a continuation of Matan Torah. Then what happens? Moshe descends down the mountain. In horror, he's greeted with the sight of the Egel Hazav. Moshe smashes the Luchos to smithereens. This is a people now in spiritual disaster, and he has to atone for them and stitched the ruptured relationship between Hashem and the Jewish people and have a second Matan Torah, second Luchos, Yom Kippur, and bring healing. And only then, in Parshas Vayakal Pekudei, is that Mishkan from before the Egel fiasco actually built. Right? So here we have a Mishkan which is introduced to the people after the Chet HaEgel, but was actually commanded by Hashem before the Chet HaEgel. It seems to me that when Chazal say the Mishkan is an atonement for the Egel, of course they are conscious of the fact that the Mishkan from the divine presentation existed before the Egel. But rather what Chazal are being conscious of is the fact that it was first introduced to the Jewish people after the Egel was significant. That the Jewish people heard the Mishkan narrative with new nuance, which perhaps would not have been the interpretation from Hashem's original divine narrative of the Mishkan. Hashem gave the Mishkan with one idea, but a people was forever changed with Chet HaEgel. Events change us, tragedies change us. We were a changed people after Chet HaEgel. And I believe Chazal are therefore picking up on it's not a coincidence that we first heard the Mishkan narrative after Chet HaEgel. That was not simply a matter of logistics. Moshe did not have a chance to teach them about the Chet HaEgel, about the Mishkan, which Hashem commanded him when he was an eye, before he was diverted with the Egel. Logistical coincidences don't happen in Chumash. There must be a significance to this abrupt interruption from the Mishkan, which was introduced to Moshe, preceding the Luchos, which then hung in balance until after the Egel and the Egel Atonement. And only then was presented to the people. This is to imply that a Mishkan took on new meaning to a people after Chet Ha'egel, because we always find new meaning in a Torah and how it talks to us. And I will give you one understanding of what a Mishkan meant to a people after they sinned with Chet Ha'egel. That perhaps the Mishkan originally was an idyllic institution, a place of Hashras, Hashchina, a perfect, untarnished people communes with the divine there, connects with Hashem there. But after Chet Ha'egel, it means something else, or takes on a new meaning. Because certainly, a people who worships Chet Ha'egel, a people who in some sense serves Avodah Zarah and struggles with idolatry, is a people who is having trouble relating to an omnipotent God, Hashem, who's beyond. The entire drive for Avodah Zarah for idolatry is to create an image, to have an icon, to have some concrete thing to direct one's prayers, one's longings, and in the case of a Jewish people without Moshe, stuck in the desert at the time of Chet Ha'egel, to find solace in. That the truth, Hashem alone is your address. Well, that's a very hard thing for people to deal with, because Hashem is beyond. He can't be touched. He can't be felt. He seems enigmatic. He seems beyond. We can easily mistake this reality of Hashem as Chalila being aloof, which of course he's not. But this is what is behind the Chet Ha'egel or any form of idolatry. Now, ideally, a Jewish people should be able to connect to Hashem who's beyond, while he might not be accessible in a sensory way. But the Ha'egel revealed this need we had to find some physical manifestation or emanation of the divine. But now we need one which will not be idolatry. We need some sort of symbol, some sort of icon, which will not chalila substitute Hashem, but rather serve as a direction back to the divine. And now a Mishkan, which consists of forms, vessels, and even images. Two golden cherubs, Kruvim, in the Holy of Holies, which are not supposed to be deified chalila as God, but rather serve as symbolisms, that the two Kruvim are supposed to represent the Kisei HaKavod, the throne of glory, which has the angelic reality of Cherub's Kruvim, Hashem as Yoshev HaKruvim, right? So now, the Mishkan means something new to the people. It means satisfying their need to find physical, concrete expression of the divine. And they find healing through Mishkan. They hear it in a new way, in a new sense. And I'll bring you a splendid development of this teaching, of this new understanding of Mishkan. A Mishkan post-Chet Ha'egel guides the Jewish people, or responds to the struggle of Chet Ha'egel, the Jewish people's penchant and need to find physical icon, physical expression, as much as that's a dangerous, idolatrous idea. We are taught on Parsha Shmini that Aaron is afraid to inaugurate Mishkan worship. And the Medrash explains, according to the Mefarshim's understanding, that Aaron was afraid when he looked at the Mizbeach and he saw the two Karnei Mizbeach, the two horns of the Mizbeach. They seem to him as horns of the Ha'egel. Aaron had, of course, been responsible for the creation of Ha'egel. When Aaron saw those horns of the Mizbeach, it was as though deja vu. He saw the Ha'egel again, explains the Torah's Kohanim, as per the Ravid's interpretation, and he wanted no part of it. Now, how am I to interpret a Chazal like that? With modern ears hearing a Medrash like this, we would be prone to interpret it as a post-traumatic stress. You know, there's this unresolved tension of his past, the ego, so he's in a delusional way seeing it in unexpected places, two bulging horns in an altar, two bulging horns in the ego. But as much as we relate to that, I don't think it's doing Aaron HaKohen justice, or for that matter, the Medrash justice, to read it that way. If Aaron sees a semblance of the Ha'egel in the Mizbeach, there must be something to it. It is not wild delusion. Because the answer is, the Mishkan, now in a post-ego world, was supposed to supplant the ego, believe it or not. Was supposed to tell the Jewish people, yes, you have a need for icons, which is dangerous. The Mishkan's going to show you how to do it. Not an idol which Chalila will replace Hashem, but a symbol that will direct you to swirl higher up to Hashem. But Aaron is scared of it. Aaron recognizes them as Bayek and all the Mishkan icons for what they are. And he, who had sinned so terribly with Chet HaEgel, sees it as dangerous. Right? That's a much more sympathetic understanding of Aaron and where he's coming from. It is not cheap delusion on his part when he sees the two horns of the Mizbeach as deja vu as the two horns of Egel. He's onto something. And I will share with you one final textual clue of this idea, of this notion in our parsha, that after Egel, a divine Mishkan now took on new meaning and serves as an encouragement to the people that when you fall spiritually, when you have struggles, the Torah of old, the mitzvahs of old, can respond to you and your needs in new, unexpected ways. We will conclude with this. When we study the story of the Egel, the golden calf in our parsha, the Torah says, "Vayotzer oso bacharet," which, according to Rashi's second interpretation, means Aaron formed it in a formation device. Charat is read as similar to the etymological expression charus, engraved or formed. So vayatzer oso bacharet, as much as the spelling is somewhat different with a tes instead of a tuf, is read Aaron formed the egel with an engravery or formation device. Vayatzer oso bacharet, he formed it with a charus, with an engravery sort of device. See Rashi's explanation. Well, with that in mind, the egel was just formed with an engravery device, vayatzer oso bacharet. When we continue to follow the narrative, when it describes Moshe descending down the mountain with the luchos, which he's about to shatter, and we see a very interesting terminology, perek lamed aleph, pasuk, perek lamed aleph, pasuk yidches. I apologize, perek lamed beis, pasuk tesayin. It says, Valuchos maisa elkim hema, vamichtav michtam elkim hu, charus al haluchos. The words of the luchos were engraved upon them. It is specifically in this context, and this context alone, in the Chet HaEgel scene, when Moshe is descending down the mountain with the luchos, which he's about to shatter upon seeing the egel, where it describes the words of the egel as engraved. It does not use that word elsewhere in Chumash to describe the luchos. You hear the echo and reverberation in the text. The egel was engraved, vayatzer oso bacharet, which according to Rashi means it was formed with an engravery device, and the luchos, which he's about to shatter, were engraved. The coincidence is too great. There's some music to the text here. Luchos are engraved. Egel is engraved. Well, I suggest the message to the people is as follows. Your Chet HaEgel is about to bring the shattering of the luchos, and you're going to struggle to bring these luchos back. But realize something. The luchos are engraved just like the egel is engraved. You know why? You had a need to engrave, to form, to carve, to iconize. And that can be seen as a terrible thing. But upon further reflection, you're going to see that the mitzvahs of old, the luchos of old, actually contain everything you need in them. They have formations too, a formation of Torah, physicality of Torah, which does not adulterate the divine, but does provide us with physical symbols, the engraved letters in the luchos. Everything you're seeking in an engraved egel, there are actually engraved letters in the luchos. All of your spiritual struggles, you could find satisfaction for them in Torah. Now with new ears, sing the Torah through new lens as a Torah responding to you in your struggles. That is what the Luchos do. That is what the Mishkan does. And that, my friends, is, I'm suggesting, what all of Torah and mitzvahs do. All of us, as a struggling people, to use our previous example in the beginning of this year, in a me generation. It doesn't sound positive. It doesn't sound optimal that we're a self-absorbed me generation not acting from a place of duty. But you know, we use this position to hear new messages, to find new approaches in Torah. A Torah which grows with us. That's what makes Torah relevant. That's what makes Torah a Torah's Chaim. And thus we all become stakeholders in a personal relationship with Torah, in a personal relationship with Hashem, in His word that speaks to us, no less than our ancestors who lived perhaps in more idyllic circumstances spiritually. Thank you very much. Please press the follow button to receive ongoing share updates, and please share this share with at least two friends.